So here's a joke for you. I'm actually doing some building. That's the joke. That's the joke. Because those of you who know me will think that's hilarious. I am notoriously clumsy, like really clumsy. I'm very unco as well. And so I'm doing this building work, right? I'm working with Big Dean and Brooksy, his son. And, you know, at the end of every day, they count their fingers. And if they get to double digits, they're just so thankful, really, because I've dropped a cement sheet on Dean's fingers. I've dropped a steel frame on Brooks' fingers. I cranked up the genie lift and snapped the cable because I forgot to untie it. I dropped a cupboard on Brooksy's foot. You know, so when I arrive at the building site and I say, hi, I'm here to help, they like, you know, in fact, you know what they call me? No offense to anyone here, but they call me Tracy, Tracy the tradie. It used to be behind my back, but now I know. But there you go. So listen, but hey, there's progress. So I'm really learning to use tools. Really, I am. I used to use a hammer only. But I'm learning other things. And what do you think the most important tool on a building site is? What's the most important tool? I'll tell you. It's a spirit level. Oh my goodness. Vital. A spirit level is vital. People, the bubble doesn't lie. The bubble tells the truth. The bubble tells absolute truth. You can't debate with it. You can't argue with it. You can't say, be reasonable, move to the left. You know, it's got no respect of persons. The bubble is the truth. So I'm doing cladding on the wall, right? Now, I can tell you, the bubble's out. But I'm thinking to myself, look, really, picky. You know, it's just a little bit deviant. Is that a big deal? I'll tell you what. Go with it and watch what happens when you get to the top roof. What was a little crack over here becomes a crater at the top. You must use a spirit level or it's going to go wrong. So really, it's no debate. Here's my question this morning. Is there a spirit level for human beings? Is there? Is there an absolute standard for human beings? Is there? It's a good question. So every one of us here this morning, we're building our lives, right? You're building your life, right? Is there a standard? Is there something you have to line up with? Something outside of yourself? Or are you your own standard? What do you think? Let me come from a different angle. Is the human being infinitely malleable? You know what malleable means? You can shape it into anything you want. Is the human being infinitely malleable? You can make it whatever you want it to be. Is that true? I'll ask you a different question. Am I my own designer? Is that true? I design myself. I can be whatever I want to be. Is that true? Well, duh. In Western culture, that's definitely true. That's a truth you don't even discuss. Don't go there. Because every movie, every media outlet, every school teacher, every philosopher, every pop star, every movie star, you know they always write, right? Every sportsman, everybody knows you can be whatever you want to be. Frozen. Do you remember the movie Frozen? Came out about 40 years ago. In the movie Frozen, do you remember the song by unpronounceable Ida? I can't remember. But anyway, here's the words. It's time to see what I can do, to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. Is that true? Do you think it's true? Well, if there's a God, and that God designed people, he has a purpose for people. If. He designed us with something in his mind. See, here's the choice you have to face. Either you are your own designer, or God is your designer. That's the choice we all have to make. And I'll go further than that. What happens if that God became a human being? If that God became a human being, then I want to suggest to you, that's the prototype. That's the epitome. That's a spirit level. If God should become a human being, then when I look at that human being, that's what I should be. Get it? It's like the architect or the designer of a building comes to the building and the walls are skew and wobbly and bent. The builder, the architect, looks at it and goes, nah, that's not what I had in mind. It's not fit for purpose. Knock it down, start again, and next time use the spirit level that I gave you. You know? I want to suggest to you, the Bible is God's spirit level. The Spirit reveals the absolute standards of God. The bubble doesn't lie. Jesus said this. Let me quote Jesus for you. He uses the same analogy. Jesus said, whoever builds their life on me and my words is like someone who builds their house on a rock. And when the storms come, they stand. But, says Jesus, if you build your life on anything else, it's like someone building their house on sand. It looks pretty. Sand castles are lovely, really, until the tide comes in. And that's what Jesus says. The reason I'm saying all of these things is that's what Romans chapter 1 is all about. Romans chapter 1 is very simple. It's simply this, that because we, not they, we, all of us, have rejected God and we followed our own desires, we've become bent. We've become skewed. I've become my own spirit level. And the result of that is that God is going to discard us. He's going to get rid of people because he's making a perfect world. And there's no place for skew things because it doesn't work. Let me show it to you. Think with me. Here's the first thing we'll see this morning. We know God from creation, but we suppress the truth. Look at verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them. God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they're without excuse. It's not hard. All of creation tells you there is a God. Do you want proof there's a God? Look at creation. That's what it says. All of creation tells us there is a God. And science confirms this. Science is the study of what has been made. And the bestest scientists have always looked at creation and thought, yeah, there must be a God. Copernicus, Darwin, Isaac Newton, Einstein, Pascal, the greatest scientists have looked at creation and thought, yeah, well, there must be a God. But never mind them. What about you and me? What do you see? What do you see when you look at creation? Do you watch David Attenborough? Do you? What do you see? I'll give you one example. This is a cool example. Don't forget this. This is a classic case of science catching up to imagination. Now, some of you will remember a very old movie. I think it was in black and white, called Lord of the Rings. Very old. Right. There's this coolest part. It's so cool. There's this creature called a tree beard. Now, a tree beard, for those of you who don't know, looks like Matt Malcolm. It's tall and gangly, and it's this funny big tree, and it's like walks along, and it looks after the other trees. It's called a tree shepherd, a herder of the forest. It's all imagination. Until science has just begun to discover, I was reading about this yesterday, did you know that in a forest, the tallest, strongest tree sometimes can function as what scientists call the tree hub? Here's what it does. You're not going to, this is going to, the tree hub, the biggest, strongest tree in a forest, guess what? It looks after about 40 to 47 trees around it. Gets weirder. Not all, but some. It gets weirder. What it does is the trees talk to each other. They talk through a thing called mycelium. It's like a fungi. And what happens is when a tree is struggling, it sends signals to the tree hub. It gets even weirder. And the tree hub starts to dump nutrients through the fungi and help the tree that's struggling. Scientists are just starting to discover this. I mean, people, the trees are talking to each other. I mean, really? It's like, you know, it's like the wood wild web. You know, that's a bad joke. But what's my point? My point is sometimes you look at that and you go, oh my goodness, there must be a God. It's so much better than I thought. It's amazing. All of creation tells us there is a God. And what does creation say about God? Well, it tells us a couple of things, not everything. But look at verse 20. His invisible attributes, his eternal power. So creation tells us that God is powerful. When last did you look at the sun? So you'll need like SPF 200 and, you know, welding glasses or whatever. Did you know the sun burns at 15 million degrees Celsius with constant nuclear explosion? Oh my goodness, God is powerful. Creation tells us God is powerful. Not only that, look what it says in verse 20. It tells us about his divine nature. When you look at creation, you see order, you see beauty, you see diversity. God loves diversity. You look at all those things. It tells you about the divine nature. But above all else, it just says, Dwayne, you're small and he's big. It tells us that God is God. He's divine nature. You know what? Do I need to prove this to you? I'm making this up. I don't know exact figures. 98% of all human beings who have lived on this planet for the last thousands of years, whatever, believe in God. And they've not one of them have seen him. Don't believe stories. None of them have seen him. Not one has seen him. So why do all these people, are they all drinking the same Kool-Aid? Why do they all believe in God? Because of what this says. Creation has convinced them there is a God. Everyone knows this. So, why don't some people believe in God? If that's true, Dwayne, why don't some people believe in God? And the answer is verse 18. Look at it. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness. Look at it. Who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. The truth is, some people suppress what creation tells them. When their little baby pops out, their first little baby, there's that moment where, oh, thank you, God. Oh, no, wait. I don't believe in God. I do not believe. They suppress the truth. They're not ignorant. They ignorant. Why? Why do people not want to believe in God? I, Dwayne, why don't I not want? Well, because of verse 18. Who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. Here's the point. I don't want to believe in God because I've got unrighteousness. Here's the thing. If there is a God, oh no, that means I can't design myself. If there is a God, He designs me. No, I want to design myself. And so I suppress the truth. Notice people don't suppress the truth by intellectual arguments. I've been around a while, you know, 36 years. I have never heard a good argument for God's non-existence. We got text questions. There's a number. Text in. Give me one or take me to the dome. There's no good argument for God's non-existence. None. We suppress the truth not by intellectual arguments, but by unrighteousness. I don't want to believe in God because I want to do what I want to do. That's the truth. It's like bricks. It's like a building. Imagine you've got this wall, this high wall, and at the top are all these bricks, beautifully built. But as you go along, there's one brick going the wrong way. Go! And so the other bricks, hey, buddy, you're going the wrong way, you know? What does the other brick say? Don't be so judgmental. You know, who are you to say, I think we should have laws in this country to stop you saying things like that? How can you say I'm going the wrong way? Oh, sorry. So, look, I don't mean to come across arrogant. But look down there. There's a spirit level. If you look at the spirit level, you'll see you're out of line. Oh, no, I don't believe in spirit levels. There's no such thing as a spirit level. I'm an A-levelist, you know? But that's what people do. We suppress the truth. If you do that, God says, I will judge you. I will judge you. You've got no excuse. You've suppressed the truth. God is an inconvenient truth. He's inconvenient to me also at times. If I was selfless, loving, kind, caring, oh my goodness, God would not be an inconvenient truth. But because I'm unrighteous, just like you and everybody else, the righteous God is an inconvenient truth. So what do we do with God? We know God from creation. So what do? Look at the second thing. We know God, but we exchange Him for idols. Look at verse 21. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for idols or images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, and creatures. What's going on here? Well, here's the thing. Dwayne, I don't want a God over me. What are my options? Oh, I know. I'll make up a God that suits me. And that's what people do. They exchange the glory of God for something made up. I prefer to think of God as Father Christmas. Awesome. Does that suit you? Yes. Well, that's why you made it up. We make up gods that suit us. And that's what people do. Everyone does this. Even the atheist. Listen, don't be silly. Everyone worships something. It's not possible to worship nothing. You say, yeah, I got you there. I don't worship anything. Oh, yeah. Something in your life is your highest value. I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that. No. Something in your life is your highest value. Whatever that is, that's what you worship. For Christians, that's God. For you, I don't know what it is. And so what you do is you exchange the glory of God for something in your own mind. Listen, Your heart has got a throne on it. God sits on that throne, and it's light because God is light. But if you should decide, oh, this universe isn't big enough for both of us, I think God's got to go, and you get rid of him, you will put something else on your heart. And it'll go dark because it's not God and it's not light. And we exchange the glory of God for something less than God. And for lots of things. Look at verse 23. We exchange the glory of the immortal God sometimes for images resembling mortal man. So sometimes we swap God with man. Now that's the West. The Western world, you know, we're so arrogant. We look at other people and say, he's worshiping a chicken. How dumb is that? But we also exchange God. We put man up there. And we look at man and we say, man is the measure of all things. That's what the West does. But it's still swapping God. And someone else might swap it for a chicken. But you're doing the same thing. Even as it says there, mortal man, birds, animals, and even creepy things. Now, what's so bad about doing that? What's so bad? Why is it so bad to have something in the place of God? Here's why. Are you ready? Because you resemble what you worship. No matter what you worship, you resemble. You go into your daughter's bedroom. Why is she dressed like Billie Eilish? The answer is because she values Billie. When you value something, you resemble that thing. That's Christians. What are Christians? Christians are people who value Jesus. So we resemble Jesus more and more. Whatever you worship, you will end up resembling. And if it's not God, here's what's so bad. You're going to resemble something less than God. If you take that spirit level and you replace it with a snake or something bent and you follow that, you're going to become bent and skew. And that's what we've done. We know God. We exchange it for idols. And look at this. Number three, we've become bent and twisted. We know God's law, number three, but we sin against God, against each other, and sadly, against ourselves. What is sin? What is sin? Sin is just not being in line with the spirit level. Sin is moral deviancy. Sin is being out of line with God. So have a look at verse 24. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves. Because they exchanged, there's that word again, the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. You know, those are terrible words. Look at that. Verse 24, God gave them up. What a terrible thing when God says, fine, I wash my hands of you. You don't believe in me? I don't believe in you, God says. You give up on me? I give up on you. God doesn't believe in atheists. It's a terrible thing. Do you know what the judgment is? Here's what God says. Go design yourself. I mean, what kind of judgment is that? Go design yourself. It's a horrific judgment. Horrific. It's like saying to a kid, fine, you don't want to eat my food? Cook your own food and eat it. That's a judgment right there. It's the same thing. When the hammer says, no one designed me, I self-identify as a screwdriver, it's going to hurt. It's not going to work. And that's the logic in verse 25. Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie And they worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Can you just be logic for a moment? If man is the measure of all things, then there's no more measurement. Logically. If the creature is the standard, logically, there's no more standards. And so what are we going to do? Here's what we do. We do whatever we feel. We do whatever we feel, and that's the judgment. Turn over the page. Look at verse 26. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. God says, you don't want to follow me? Fine. Follow your feelings. Follow your passions. For their women, look at verse 26, exchange natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. You're not just out of sync with God. Look at planet Earth. You're out of sync with planet Earth. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women, were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. You're following your passions. Here's what you think. If I want it, if I really, really want it, it must be good. It must be okay. Why is it okay? Because I really, really want it. How immature is that kind of thinking? From yay high, when you were this big, you were taught that just because you want it doesn't mean you can have it. Since you were yay high. When you were yay high, your parents taught you that your desires are wrong. So, mommy, mommy, I want my 700th cookie now. I really want it. I'm going to hold my breath till I get it. And your mommy says, no. Your desires, just because you're not lying. I believe you. I know you got those desires. I believe you. You're not lying. You're not making it up. But they skew. They're wrong. And you can't give in to them. You can't have it. It's not good for you. And it's not just cookies. It's everything. It's greed. It's laziness. It's lying. It's violence. And it's sex. Just because you want it doesn't mean you can have it. And it doesn't mean your desires are good. And even if you pass laws in this country that say, I'm not allowed to disagree with you, you're still wrong. Sin is progressive. What the Bible teaches us here is that sin consumes you. It takes over you till you are so gone, you self-identify with your sin. Your sin starts to define you. Have a look with me there, verse 27. Look at the progress. The men likewise gave up natural relations with women. So it begins with saying no to the good. You say no to what is right. And you were, look what it says, consumed with passion. Your passions start to take over you. Listen, there's nobody in this room who hasn't had weird desires. There's not a married guy in this room who hasn't looked at another girl and thought, ooh, you know, she obviously hasn't had 12 kids yet, you know. But you stop it. You don't let those desires start growing. And they take over you. And you never stop thinking about it. And it's consuming you. You're always thinking about it. You're always feeding your eyes. Then you're on the internet. You're doing porn more and more. Then you're masturbating. Then finally in the end, you're gone. And your desires take you over. They look what it says. Consumed with passion. And then once you're consumed with passion, you commit the deed. Men committing shameless acts with men. No one is straight on Tuesday and gay on Wednesday. Tell the truth, you worked for years to get there. You gave into yourself. You gave into yourself. You let you, etc. Now, at this point, you're sitting there thinking, he's talking to people who aren't here. I wish my neighbors, you know, Christopher and Larry were here. They should be hearing this. I'm talking to you because we're all in the same boat. There's no difference between homosexual people and us. We're all guilty of this. Look at what he says. Verse 28. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. Only a debased mind thinks sodomy is okay. Only a debased mind thinks sex with minors is okay. And people do both. People do both. In fact, I saw the new word for it. It's called a map. Do you know what a map is? A map is a minor attracted person. Both are skewed and unacceptable. But it's all of us. You might be sitting here saying this church is homophobic, run for the hills, or to the ABC, or wherever you want to run to. But it's not just homosexual people. It's all of us. Look, verse 29. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are, how are you doing? You've done none of this. They are gossips. There I was, looking at homosexual people saying, you're out of line, but I'm gossiping. I'm just as out of line as anybody. Slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful. I've never boasted. Inventors of evil. Disobedience to parents. Thank goodness my parents aren't here. Foolish, faithless, hot. Well, this is us. It's not them. It's us. This is what happens to all of us when we reject God. We're all in the same boat. You know, I want to say this a million times. If you're a homosexual and you're here today, you're not special. You're just like us. And we're just like you. We're all in the same boat. So, what is God going to do about this? We know God from creation. We suppress it. We know God. We exchange Him for. We know God's law, but we sin against Him, against each other. What do you think God should do? What would you do? Here's what God's going to do. This is our last thing. We deserve to die. Every single person deserves to die. Look at what it says in verse 32. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but they give approval to those who practice them. The saddest truth is that if that building has got bricks that are skew, the builder is going to take them and discard them. And my house is like a building site at the moment. And there's a pile of rubbish. It's called rubble. It's going in the skip and it's going to the dump. It's rubbish. The word for hell is that word, Gehenna. It means a rubbish dump. God is going to discard those who are out of sync with His Spirit. And that's every single one of us. Oh my goodness, I'm going to a different church. There must be a happier church somewhere around you. Can I give you the good news? We're not there yet. We're working through the book of Romans. We'll get there. But are you ready for the astonishing good news? Here it is. You and I have exchanged God for other things, like surfing. Or whatever. We've exchanged God, right? And it's damaged us. Do you want to hear an amazing thing? God also has done a big exchange. Here's what God did. He took His Son, Jesus Christ, And he exchanged Jesus with you and me. Amazing news of Christianity is that God took all his judgment, all his wrath. Did you see verse 18? The wrath of God is being revealed. He took all that wrath and he poured it, not on you, not on me, on Jesus. His son exchanged places with us. That's how much God loves us. Even though he says such hard things and you're going, I'm never coming back to this church. At least hear this. The same God who says these hard things, it's the same God who loves you. And he tells you these things because he has got a solution. Not you, he. He sent his son. And on the cross, Jesus Christ swapped places with you. He died bearing your penalty. Have a look at this verse in the Bible. For our sake, God made Jesus, God made him. God made Jesus to be sin. Jesus who knew no sin. So that in Jesus, we might become the righteousness of God. Can you believe it? God made, we've been reading about our unrighteousness. God took the righteous Jesus and exchanged places with us and made Jesus carry our unrighteousness. So what's God busy doing now? Isn't he great? If I was a builder and all these bricks were skew, I'm walking off site. I'm downing tools and I'm going to my union, you know, and I ain't working there. God doesn't go to the union of gods because there's no sin. Here's what he does. He doesn't walk off site. Look what he does. He rebuilds. Listen to 1 Peter. As you come to Jesus, a living stone, rejected by men, we know that. But in the sight of God, chosen and precious. You yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. All you have to do is come to Jesus. Let him wash you. Let him clean you. Let him start changing your heart. Aligning you with the spirit level for your joy, for your good, and for his great renown and glory.